This is the David Martinez podcast here, everyone. It's about as if it were the time. It is Wednesday, August 20th, about Wednesday, I guess. Looking at my watch here, it's about Wednesday, I see. About the Wednesdaying day. Anyhow, enough of all that. Podcast time. Here it is, one for August. A little longer, again, than I wanted to, but, you know, I've got stuff. I had guests. I had people. There was a whole thing. I've got reasons. I've got excuses. Please listen to them. It is what it is. Recap. Let me first, before I forget, shout out to the people who actually did the podcast password last time. I would like to give a distinct shout out to Mr. Jonathan Cleed, who made a sort of indirect use of Oberon's deodorant, which was last episode's password. I won't go into it, but his was actually kind of funny and sort of indirect. He's a very clever man, so thank you for all that. And then people who sort of communicated it to me personally were my friends Sam Anaya and my sister-in-law, Abby Fisher, who is currently in Tunisia. So all three of you guys, thank you very much for listening and for participating and for showing me that you listen and you love. So thank you all so much for that. I may as well go ahead and start with the podcast password. So, podcast password time. Podcast password, as those of you who listen faithfully know, is the mechanism by which I can determine who has actually listened to the podcast and who just tells me that they have and, you know, pretends that they did. So the podcast password for this time, I'll choose an easy one and just say the podcast password is mirth. The podcast password is mirth. I've recently come to enjoy that word, and I think actually one of my previous podcast titles was My Mirth is Larger Than Yours, which I thought was a little funny. I don't know, and I've decided to sort of use it. It's a fun word. It has a fun sort of meaning to it, and I would like to see people work it into sentences. I would like to see people in general in today's day work it into sentences more often. But you know, I feel like I can kind of help that along by at least making it the podcast password and maybe compelling a couple of people to actually do it. So there it is. Recapping previous podcast stuff. It's sort of funny to me. Well, first of all, it's funny within the context of a given podcast, I'll attach myself to certain filler sort of words, like sort of this and sort of that and sort of and sort of and sort of. And it's not until I actually go back and listen to it that I realize how often I say certain words, and now I'm going to be self-conscious about it for the remainder of this podcast. But it's last podcast I felt like one could almost make a fatal drinking game out of how many times I said sort of in last podcast. So it was kind of funny for me to listen to that. And then also too, something sort of struck me, and I did it again, in my last podcast, partially because I was less prepared than I feel like I should have been. And I kind of felt it afterward as I'm sort of listening back to it. And, the things that I think in my head, the things that go on in my brain, they always seem so much more complete and whole and really well thought out as long as they sort of stay in my brain and just kind of stay in my head there. But as soon as they leave my mouth and are exposed to the open atmosphere, I kind of realize, wow, that was a unsubstantial stuff they are really made out of, and how much I really haven't thought through certain things that I, you know, sometimes say. And again, it's not until I sort of air these things out that I kind of see them for, you know, the sort of incomplete and unsubstantial things that they are. And I feel like that is kind of an introverted sort of problem. You know, as some of you may know about me, I do consider myself, or I have been told, it's been impressed upon me, which holds more authority than I think this about myself, of course, which is why I said it, that I tend to be a bit more introverted. I have a exuberant sort of personality, but in general, I enjoy being alone, and I kind of recharge and have a, you know, there's a certain distinct pleasure I take in being by myself and being with my own thoughts. And I always try to sort of carve out that time whenever I can. And I've just kind of, okay, I'm just tend to be a bit more on the introverted scale. It is a scale or a spectrum. So I am sure there are many more people who are much more further down that path than I am, and, you know, more power to them. But I feel I tend to be more on that particular scale. But the problem is, and I feel like this flies in the face of all of these lists that people are, and, you know, articles that people, I guess it's a little old now, not many people have done it in a while, but for a while people were just going crazy about, like, all these things that you need to understand about introverts, and, like, what's so frustrating about, you know, 19 things that are just frustrating about being introverted, of what, or it's, you know, which is tantamount to, you know, which basically ends up just being a big giant list of why they think they are better than everybody else, and so on and so forth. And that's a whole podcast topic in and of itself, why I don't like any of that nonsense. But what I will say is, one distinct failing on the part of introverts is that we tend to have this inflated sense of being more thoughtful and being sort of more clever and more and have better sort of introspection than other people, because as the old saying goes, you know, it's better to sort of be, how does it go? It's such an old saying, I forget it at times. It's better for people to sort of think you a fool than to open your mouth and have it sort of, you know, and then remove all doubt. Which basically means most of the things that go on in our heads are incomplete or maybe even just sort of dumb. But extroverts, because, you know, there's less of a filter between, you know, what goes on in the old noggin toboggan and what comes out of the old mouth hole. But because there's less of a sort of filter with that, they're always sort of being exposed, and their ideas are always being sort of exposed more often for how weak and unsubstantial they really are. Whereas people like me, it tends to kind of sit in the brain and just sort of fester and grow, and I get to sit there and pretend and imagine that I'm more thoughtful and interesting than I really am. And then I come on in front of a mic and I say a bunch of stuff that I'm thinking like, oh, this is very entertaining and kind of clever stuff. And I listen back to it and I go, wow. If I'm able to kind of have that sort of objectivity about it, I listen back to it and go, like, that was kind of dumb. I'm not as clever or as interesting or as well thought out as I really thought I was. And here is the evidence preserved on a website and in people's podcast players for all of eternity. Or for however long, you know, digitalization lasts. So, what's even my point for all this? I guess my point is, that is one of the things I do appreciate about being able to do this whole podcast thing, is that I'm able to kind of, it can be somewhat humbling in some regards. Things that I, you know, sort of go and play on in my head that I'm very sort of confident about until they sort of hit the air and the oxygen and the atmosphere, and they sort of shrivel and die because they really weren't strong enough to make it out there. And then now I have to go, like, wow, I should really think that through a little bit better before I just sort of open my mouth and make words happen with it. So, anyway, that's kind of how I felt with some of my last podcasts. And I don't know, you know, what the remedy, you know, should I just, you know, be a lot more guarded with my words? Should I be a lot more sort of thoughtful about it? And maybe, and I think probably, but at the end of the day, what am I doing this for? Am I doing this because, like so many internet bloggers out there, I want to, I feel I have some wisdom that I need to impose on everyone else, and I'm going to tell you what I think about this, that, and the other thing, and it's a perspective that I'm sure, I'm positive you haven't really ever considered, which is almost never true, because most of the time whenever there's a blog article, it's always the same reaction that this guy and 100 other cranks or dummies are having towards, you know, some particular thing. Most people who sort of spout on the internet, and myself included, you know, in response to and reaction to some particular thing, isn't saying anything interesting or original, except to a handful of other dummies who think like that person. So, again, just reiterating that, hey, as long as I'm being at least, you know, kind of entertaining, hopefully that this podcast still has some purpose, because the well of wisdom, the well of sort of intellectual prowess is a bit shallow in this particular well. So anyhow, little sip-a-roo here. I'll be honest, that was a bit of an exaggerated sip. I was really trying to come across that I was sipping something, and it didn't feel real. It felt forced. I won't lie to you folks. But that does bring me to the first set of topics. It's been a while since I've reviewed any whiskey or any other sort of alcohol for that matter. So I thought I'd bring one in here to the mix into something that I've been enjoying recently, which is George Dickel Barrel Select. George Dickel Barrel Select. Some of you may be familiar with the name brand George Dickel. It's one of the more prolific, if that's the right correct word. It's one of the more available. It's one of the more ubiquitous whiskey brands that are out there. George Dickel. It's kind of like one, like the Tennessee equivalent of like a Jim Beam kind of thing. Like it's definitely out there and it's cheap usually. George Dickel is commonly known as the quote unquote other Tennessee whiskey. The first one, of course, being Jack Daniel's. A lot of people, and I'll just kind of go into this briefly about Tennessee whiskey in general, because there's really not that much truly Tennessee whiskey out there. Even though Jack Daniel's is the most popularly exported American whiskey brand. Tennessee whiskey is, at least for the people who enjoy it and those who sort of distill it, is not technically a bourbon. At least they don't like to consider it a bourbon. A bourbon is more of a Kentucky thing. And for all practical purposes, the two are largely the same, but with one important distinction, is that Tennessee whiskey, in some way or other, is always charcoal filtered, which means that the unaged spirit goes through charcoal in Jack Daniel's. I think it like falls down like a sort of well or sort of a channel of charcoal, and in George Dickel the vat gets emptied through some chilled charcoal. But the whole point is that Tennessee whiskey always goes through this charcoal filtration process before being aged, which has the effect of mellowing the spirit quite a bit. Tennessee whiskey is known for being smooth and easy to drink in nature, and George Dickel Barrel Select is no exception. The color of the bottle is of the spirit is kind of this yellowy, caramely kind of tone. I guess it's not quite. It's kind of a dirty gold or like a light amber. I don't know. It's some, you know, you can recognize it, and it's not that hard to find. The smell. Oh, it's this. Sort of sweet, maybe toffee-ish, vanilla-ish kind of, but it's got that, and I guess it's corny kind of aroma, that sort of like, you know, like cornbread or maybe shortbread kind of smell to it, that's, you know, kind of a distinctly American whiskey kind of thing. The flavor, distinctly American whiskey. Very sweet, vanilla-y, toffee sort of notes. Very corn. It's like sort of sweet at first, and then you've got this long, sweet corn kind of finish at the end, which is really nice because the finish is really nice and long and lingering and satisfying, especially for a whiskey in its class. Like this, you can buy here in California for like 30-something bucks. It's a pretty easy and accessible whiskey to drink. So pleasant flavor, mellow, easy to drink. And you know, at a price point that's really, really accessible. So all in all, it's a very fun and interesting and lovely whiskey to just sort of have on hand, something that's not like a cocktail whiskey necessarily, but something that's, certainly presentable for a lot of people, but you know, you don't have to sweat it or worry, you know, if somebody gets a little extra helping of it, you know, at a party. So, definitely a recommendation there with the, George Dickel. Brings me to my next topic there. Ice Bucket Challenge. So as you know, but of course it's still sort of going on. I'm still seeing people post this rather a lot here on the internet with the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge. So it is. It's yet another one of these internet trends. And the other day, my good friend Mr. Eric Bensamakan, he did the whole challenge, and I was one of the people that he challenged to the whole thing.
So,
all right. So I was, I was left with a couple of options here. What do I do? Do I sit there and be a jerk and say, "Look at do that? That's stupid. With ice in your head, what would I do that for?" Or I could just say, "You know what? Fine. No big deal. I'll take the challenge, do the ice thing, post it online and challenge a few other people and pass it along. Why not? Fun." So I did. I'm not sure if it was posted on Twitter, but it was definitely posted on my Facebook profile. I go up there, I do the ice, I make a whole little thing of it, pour it on my head and challenge. It was my brother and then my friends, Micah Thomas and Mark Sadler, to the whole thing. And yeah, awesome, great, cool. Moving right along. But the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge, I guess, has followed the same pattern that I would say almost every sort of internet trend or bit of news that you have that comes across the internet kind of follows, which is this. So something happens, either some tragedy happens or some internet fad comes out or a celebrity dies or something, whatever. And the first initial reaction is that everybody, has the normal and expected reaction. They're either sad about this, so they participate in that, or they're excited about this. Blah 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 blah. And it's the expected reaction that everyone sort of has, and that goes on. And then almost immediately on the heels of that come all the cranks and a-holes who have to go and intellectualize why something that they just find personally sort of annoying or bothersome must be wrong or evil somehow. And then they, post some snarky nonsense on Facebook, or they do a whole blog article explaining their disgust and why it's not just merely annoying to them, but why it's actually wrong and why this is the aspect of this that you really haven't thought of. And then they just go on and on and on and on and on. And of course, the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge was no exception. So, of course, on the heels of everybody sort of doing this, people blogging are, "This is why you shouldn't do the Ice Bucket Challenger. You should really do this instead." Or, "Why aren't people doing this over here? And how could people be dumping ice on their heads when there are, like, starving children not getting gelatin in Tahiti?" Or whatever. And so, yada, yada, yada. And, of course, usually this sort of stuff... And I guess I'm going to reveal myself for the vain person that I am. Usually the sort of stuff just kind of flies over my head and I just whatever. Haters are going to hate, as the classic saying goes. But then somebody who I know on Facebook who's, I guess for me, is notorious for saying things that usually either make me cringe or make me roll my eyes or get under my skin or just make me go like, "Oh, what the hell is wrong with you?" posted the following little nugget here, which is this. "Don't waste water on stupid ice bucket challenge. Seriously, gross." Because, of course, water is gross. "Hide a sandwich next to a sleeping homeless guy's head if you want to make a difference. Give a homeless person effing bottle of water in 100-degree heat. Hasn't anyone noticed they're digging half-empty water bottles out of the trash to drink? Dumbass ice bucket dum-dums. I'm an exhibitionist, but please, don't parade your exhibition as charity." So, yeah, that whole nugget got posted. And that's, I guess for me, that was kind of the last straw. Like, and I'll be perfectly frank, part of why these things were started to get to me a little bit more is because I did it, And there's that little... part of me which, of course, realizes that at least some of the motivation behind why I did the whole stupid challenge is because I am kind of a vain and attention-hungry kind of person, and I kind of like people listening to what I have to say or doing or seeing some stupid thing that I'm doing and entertaining people and just sort of, "Hey, look, I put water on my head and I'm juggling," kind of things. So, again, I can be... I can be honest with myself enough to know that, yes, that was part of the motivation. And that part of me is, of course, a little sort of hurt and a little sort of bothered and this cringes a little bit because, you know, there's an extent to which that part of my motivation is certainly being called out. That being said, I will say a few things. Number one, in general, people's motivations for doing almost anything are usually broad and complex kinds of things. You know, any single person's motivation for doing something like this ALS challenge could be for a whole number of is usually for a combination of several things, some in different proportions and so on and so forth. But it's usually, and I would say almost always, not for one single reason. So to call out somebody's narcissistic, you know, exhibitionist kind of side as the sole and only reason why anybody would do this is kind of silly. And quite frankly, it's only narcissistic people who assume everybody else has narcissistic intentions for what they do. So I'm just going to go ahead and put that out there, number one. I had some other things here. Number two, you know, at the end of the day, despite what these people are always trying to put out there, nobody, or at least very few people, and again, only these, you know, other narcissistic people, very few people who are doing this, I imagine, really and truly, honestly, at any level, believe that they're making any sort of difference by dumping a stupid bucket of ice water over their heads. The reason why this whole thing has been so successful is because it's an amusing and exciting little exercise to, you know, to sort of dump some ice water on your head, and it's sort of, you know, it's literally chilling and it's sort of, you know, fun and thrilling in a small and safe kind of way. And then it's additionally sort of fun to like call out your friends, hey, yeah, man, well, you got to do this thing too, or blah, blah, blah. And then to see those sort of see them do it and see everybody sort of getting along with this one particular action, which at its core, you know, at least has, you know, some nice, you know, and some good intentionality. And I feel like the people who perhaps invented this challenge, who were trying to raise money for ALS, recognize this. And they recognize that it's not enough because, of course, there are 100 billion things you can give your money to every single day of the week, you know. People who are, you know, don't have water in this place or who are starving over here, or even just somebody, you know, in your local city who needs books or pencils or who could use, you know, some side work or whatever. Like, we are at no, it's almost because of the overwhelming amount of need around us that it is almost in and of itself so arresting in that you almost don't know where to sort of put, you know, any sort of energy or effort or intentionality into. But, you know, what you do is, you know, like this, like these ALS people did, is you invent some fun and, you know, amusing kind of little thing for people to do. And then a whole bunch of people do it. And even if, like, one in a few hundred people actually donates money, that's a whole lot more money for this whole cause than what originally existed. And I certainly don't look at any one single individual who dumps some water on their head and posts it on Facebook or, you know, Twitter or whatever and go, what the hell is that going to do? How is that curing ALS? Of course not, because that's not the intention. It's not to get a whole bunch of people to do something which is actually going to help. It's to create a certain buzz and a certain frenzy around it, which cumulatively will make some difference. And from what I've heard, and then the numbers vary wildly from like 4 million to 13 million, it has made a difference. And people have donated a lot of money. And this whole little fun mechanism that they invented to raise money has worked and has had the desired effect. And even if, you know, for every one, you know, generous and charitable person, you know, of several hundred of, you know, of us dummies just dumped water on our heads and then passed the challenge along, the intended effect was made, and people did it and it worked and it was fun. And everyone, you know, even those who didn't donate money, at least, had some very small, very, very small part in spreading the word, further and maybe encouraging somebody else to do so. And, that was the desired effect. But, you know, going back to this other person's here, give a homeless person a bottle of water and has no trash cans, and then hide a sandwich next to a sleeping homeless guy's head. Well, you know, I would never do that because maybe he might roll over and then, you know, get peanut butter and jelly all up in his hair. But the point is, look, and this is, of course, where I guess I'm going to say unavoidably to make myself feel better. Unavoidably, I'm going to sound like an uppity sort of prick. And in addition, at least for me, in my own personal circumstance, there is a certain amount of charitable giving that is part of our household. In addition to the, you know, money that goes regularly to our church, my wife and I donate money to various other things. Our people who sort of need it overseas, homeless folks that we just sort of buy food for occasionally, and like, you know, hey, person was here, why don't we just get this guy a plate of food here, or this or that. You know, I have, actually it's funny, this person should mention, I have bought ice water for either homeless people or even just regular service people that I've seen who were, you know, parking cars because it was really, really hot outside and they had to wear vests or something. And of course, and let me stop by saying that I'm not a particularly generous person. You know, I do these sort of things because being blessed with what I've been blessed with, these are very easy signs of generosity for me. I'm certainly not going to miss some small amount of money that I had to spend on, you know, a sandwich or some water or something, or whatever money I give to some lady who needed it over in Kenya, yada, yada, yada. I'm certainly going to still be living in a nice house and be able to drink the things that I want to drink and eat the food that I want to eat. And it certainly infringes on me little to none at all to be able to do these sort of things. But it is, and my wife is infinitely better at being thoughtful this way than I am, certainly. In fact, the small amount of generosity that I do have, I feel like I've probably inherited largely from her, and from her genuine and honest sort of generous spirit, which she was raised with being a missionary. And I guess the point is that, yes, some of these things, you know, a certain amount of giving is a part of my life and a part of what I do. But at the end of the day, I recognize that, you know what, you as a person can only focus on so much need. At the end of the day, there's enough need just in the community here in my small little city of Pomona, California, to probably occupy every waking moment of my time if I let it. We as human beings will find maybe a couple of things which particularly tug at our heartstrings, whether it's, again, some starving child here, or people who need jobs in this city, or school supplies here, or, you know, mentally disabled people over there, or whatever it is. You know, most of us can only find a couple of things we can really be concerned about. And so when I see people who sort of, you know, why aren't you focusing on this, you know? Why aren't you giving this, you know, cheese sticks to, you know, people on Skid Row, or people will come back from some trip to, like, you know, Haiti or someplace and go, I just don't understand why no people aren't more concerned about this. I'm like, you know, at the end of the day, because you're there. Because people like you are there to help. And I, like most people, probably don't have enough care and compassion. And yes, that is something I need to work on. But we can all be concerned about every little thing which is going on, because for any one single individual, it's too much. And most of us, the best we can do is find the couple of people or the couple of things that are particularly meaningful and particularly impressing on us, and just focus on trying to sort of fulfill that need. And with regard to this whole ALS challenge, you know what? Let people have their fun. Let people who are narcissistic just be narcissistic, because at the end of the day, the campaign as a whole has been hugely successful. Oh, and one last thing. Don't try to come to me about this whole, like, don't you know California's in a drought? Water's so precious. How could you be so wasteful and so evil? Because you know what, frankly, I don't buy that you care that much. What I think is you were personally put off by this broad social trend that you just didn't feel like doing. And rather than just say, you know what, I don't feel like doing that, you know what, I just find, you know, stupid things like that kind of annoying, you have to intellectualize all these reasons why it's wrong, and you find not your honest motivations, but the most pious and unassailable motivations that you can find, that you can sort of, you know, scrape up out of your soul there, and then present those as the primary things that you're so concerned about. So to all those people who, with all that sentiment, you know what? Get over yourselves and be a little more, I guess, charitable and self-forgetful, and just let people either have their stupid exhibitionism or just let them have their fun. Because at the end of the day, the whole thing as a whole actually did a lot of good. So move on. Which actually brings me to my last sort of topic. Oh, gosh, I didn't write any notes for this one. So this one's going to be a bit off the cuff. But it's something which has kind of bothered me on a few occasions and, you know, has sort of come up again. It's yet one more thing which seems to come up with every one of these internet trends. I would like people to cease the internet exploitation of starving children in Africa.
I'll tell you what I mean by that.
So once again, with every sort of, you know, new bit of news or trend or whatever that sweeps across the internet, inevitably somebody always does this. You know, let's say it's a celebrity death. This is a very common one to sort of do. They'll take a picture of that particular celebrity, and then they'll take some random picture of some obviously, and I don't want to be flippant toward this, some obviously hugely malnutritioned children in God knows what country, and say, how can we be so concerned about this when this is going on? And, again, and of course, during the ALS challenge, they just, you know, had this little thing with like a picture on one side of you know, some healthy, you know, Western, you know, American girls, you know, throwing ice water all over their heads and like, yeah, we're making a difference. And on the other side, like, oh, some poor African children just drinking a small thimble of water just to stay alive. And like, how can you Western pig dogs do all this when like evil like this is going on? And, you know, I'm so tired of this because every single time with like clockwork this happens, some jerk off decides I'm going to go ahead and just, they do like, I imagine it's like they do a Google search for like starving African children and they find the most compelling or the most sad or most heartbreaking one and they grab that and they put that next to like whatever else happened, like, you know, some thing that people are despairing over, or, you know, somebody who's jobless here in this country, or some, you know, buddy throwing ice water on their heads, and they go like, ah, see, how can you care about this when this is going on? And my first question is always like, can you even frickin' tell me where those children come from? Do you even know what particular African country you're sort of, you know, showing, oh, look at how, what a compassionate person I am, because look, I actually care about these. What have you done for those frickin' children? How much money or food or resources have you given? Do you think those kids in that photograph actually, you know, you think it's of any benefit to them at all that you've like, oh, look at, let's see how these children are hungry. How could you care that, like, Robin Williams died? You know, do you think it's any consolation to them? Do you think that they're any more well-fed? Do you think they have any better water or nutrition because you did that? Like, what's the matter with you? How, I guess there's a part of me like, how dare you exploit their actual genuine sort of need just to kind of get back at some stupid internet trend that, you know, that you find, you know, somewhat off-putting. What a bunch of a-holes and jerks. And like, just every single time I see somebody do like, stop exploiting these kids just to make some point across the internet. Oh, you pretend to care about, you know, about babies, you pro-lifers, but then like starving children in this other country, how dare you? Like, F you, what are you doing for them besides posting some stupid picture on Facebook? If you could name where any of these children come from, or, you know, even better, any one of their names, then maybe I would lend you a little bit of, you know, credibility. But I imagine none of you can. You did a Google search for starving kids. I don't doubt for a minute. And you posted it up there in some graphic that you thought would be really, just sort of deep and compelling. Screw you. The rest of us with healthy and normal sentimentality will keep going on with, you know, caring about somebody or something that actually was, you know, meaningful to us, while you go and pretend that you actually care about these other kids. So, I don't know. It's just one more one more broad internet trend that annoyed me. This is how I deal with it. I go into my office and I put up a microphone and then I tell people how and why it annoyed me. All right, well, that's probably about all the time I have here today for you boys and girls. Thank you so much for listening. I would really like, oh, I'm going to call somebody out. Oh, I'm going to call somebody out. In the spirit of calling people out to challenges, I'm going to call somebody out. If you're listening, Michael Martinez, my brother, you expressed interest in doing a podcast with me, and I would like to have you on my next podcast. So I'm calling you out, buddy. I'm calling you out, my brother, to join me on my next podcast so you and I can talk about just some things that were unique to us kind of growing up and, you know, whatever. All right. Well, thank you guys all so much. Have a wonderful rest of your August, a wonderful rest of your summer, and I will check in with you in September. Thank you.